Before the throne of God above.
Hello, and welcome to Sovereign Grace Today. I'm Michael Goins. We are currently involved in an exposition of 1 Corinthians. If you have access to a Bible, open with us to that New Testament epistle and stay tuned for today's message.
My name is graven on his hands. My name is written on his heart. I know that while in empty stands, no tongue can bid me thirsty.
Today you will hear part two of a sermon that we began last Friday from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, entitled Biblical Counsel Concerning Marriage. This is a very practical subject. The apostle deals with it very straightforwardly. I trust today's message would be helpful as we attempt together to adopt a biblical view of marriage and the family. We will backtrack just a few minutes into Friday's sermon in order to set the context for today's development of the passage.
Let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Monogamy, one man for one woman for life, is God's plan and pattern for marriage. Now, I know that I'm being simplistic in saying that. I'm stating the obvious. It's a no-brainer, you say. It may be to you, but it's not in our society. Our society, our world, our culture is so mixed up on what constitutes God's pattern for marriage. Now, God gave marriage. It's His idea, and His way works. And every other way, my friends, brings heartache and misery into our lives. So the apostle is answering some questions. These people had questions. What constitutes marriage, Paul? Can't I have as many wives as I want? Can't I have as many husbands? No, Paul says, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Somebody says, the Bible, preacher, is just too hard to understand. Can you understand that? I don't think I need to develop that thought any further. Now, notice now in verses 3 through 5. In these verses, Paul now proceeds to emphasize the principle of mutual responsibility in marriage. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. Now this isn't, he's not putting one above the other here. He's putting them both on the same plane. A mutual obligation. The wife has an obligation to her husband, and the husband has an obligation to his wife. Now I dare say that where most problems come in the marriage relationship, they come from people focusing and being concerned about their rights instead of their responsibilities. It's very common for somebody to say, I'm not having my needs met. I'm not getting what I want out of this relationship. My rights are being violated. And Paul says it's important to focus on your responsibilities, not your rights. I would challenge you today, my beloved, to think of your marriage relationships in terms of your personal obligation. Now, there's a mutual responsibility. Now, in the first century in the Corinthian church, asceticism was making inroads into the church. Asceticism is the idea that spirituality consisted in avoiding comfort and pleasure. If you were truly spiritual, you would deny yourself all comfort and pleasure. You remember that verse in Colossians that says, touch not, taste not, handle not? That was the motto of the ascetics. Even today, there is a tendency toward asceticism in the minds of some people. They say, okay, if you're truly spiritual, then you won't do this, you won't do that, you won't go here, you won't go there. That spirituality consists in avoiding comfort and pleasure. Somebody says, I'm spiritual, so I don't ever take a vacation. You say, well, if you're truly spiritual, you won't sleep over 3 hours a night, but you'll get up at 2 a.m. and spend 4 hours in prayer. You ever heard that idea? Deny yourself sleep. Deny yourself dessert. Somebody says, I'm spiritual, so I only eat vegetables, but I won't eat chocolate cake. Well, I don't believe chocolate cake is the unpardonable sin. Asceticism is the idea that if you're truly spiritual, you're going to avoid comfort and pleasure. Now, this idea was making inroads into the church at Corinth. And some were suggesting that if you really wanted to be spiritual, you should separate from your marriage partner because you don't need them anymore. You've now embraced the gospel. You've devoted yourself to Christ. And if you're truly spiritual, you don't need your marriage partner. So separate yourself and devote yourself completely to the Lord in a life of celibacy. Paul is addressing that theme now in verses 3 through 5 when he says there's only one reason to ever separate. And that should be temporary. He says, yes, it may be necessary. It may be helpful for you for temporary separation in special needs situations. But by and large, here's the rule. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. The language suggests he has an obligation to her. Due benevolence. It's her due. And likewise, the wife to the husband. Paul is addressing this erroneous idea of asceticism by saying that separation is potentially dangerous in a marriage. Somebody says, okay, you two just need to get apart for a little while. And Paul says that's a dangerous situation, very dangerous. You better be careful before you give unbiblical advice like that to somebody. Very dangerous. Because Satan will capitalize on that kind of situation to try to undermine the integrity of the marriage relationship. Notice Paul says each partner has a mutual obligation to the other, and they must not fail to fulfill their vows to that person by withholding what is due or by separating from the other partner. What is the most destructive thing in a marriage relationship? It's the spirit of selfishness, a focus on my own needs and rights instead of being considerate of the needs and the rights of my spouse. That undermines the spirit of self-giving that is so basic and fundamental to the marriage covenant. Now, there's one exception to this general rule. After he says, let the husband render to the wife due benevolence, and likewise the wife to the husband, for the wife has not power over her own body. You've gave up those rights when you got married. Your body belongs to your husband. And likewise, the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other. Don't rob each other, is what he says. Except it be with consent. Now, there's one exception to this general rule of togetherness. And that is that temporary separation in the physical aspects of marriage is allowed, but only under certain conditions. Number one, it must be by mutual consent. He says, except it be with consent for a time. You must both agree. Secondly, it must be only for special circumstances in which there is a need to devote oneself to prayer without distraction. Now, there are special circumstances in our lives. It may be a family crisis that has reached the point of no return. I mean, it's so complex and difficult that you say, we need to both devote ourselves for a little while to fasting and prayer, be that for a day or 2 days or whatever. We need to devote ourselves to calling upon the Lord and seeking His special assistance. It may be spiritual crises. There may be special needs. You may face a family decision that is just of unparalleled importance, and you may need for a little while to say, I need some time to myself so that I can pray. Will you agree to that? Yes, I'm going to pray too. And when both of you agree and then devote yourself for this in these special set of circumstances to prayer without being distracted by, okay, I'm responsible. I need to wait on her and I need to minister to him. This is a special need situation. You see what he's saying here? He is describing a special situation in which you devote yourself to prayer. But then, not only must it be by consent, and it must be for a special spiritual purpose, but it must be temporary. He says, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and then come together again in a physical way, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. He's saying that you must resume physical intimacy so that the devil does not capitalize on the separation to tempt one or the other partner to sin. And Satan is so crafty, and he will do it. He will step in and try to undermine marriages. You know, the integrity of the church is built on the integrity of what? The family. Isn't that right? And the integrity of the nation is built on the integrity of the church. So the devil knows the best way to cause havoc on a collective level, nationally speaking, is to strike right at the heart of the family. If he can weaken the family, if he can if you please, sow seeds of discord and separation in the family, in the marriage covenant, that'll affect the church and it'll affect the country. As goes the home, so goes the country. Now in verses 6 through 9, after Paul talks about the importance of mutual responsibility in marriage, then he teaches that some people have the gift of singleness. Listen to this. But I speak this by permission and not of commandment. For I would that all men were even as I myself. Now that verse, I believe verse 6, prefaces the things he's about to say in verses 7 and 8 and 9. I speak this by permission, not of commandment. I suggest that these verses are still spoken by divine inspiration. But he says, whose permission? It's not of commandment. That means God didn't command me to say this, but I speak by permission. Whose permission? Well, obviously, the Holy Spirit's. Paul is still speaking by divine inspiration. So he doesn't mean that you can take this or leave it. But he means that this is not something that has been specifically revealed. But it's a principle, Paul says, that I think is right. He says, for I would that all men were even as I myself. I would be glad if all of you could enjoy the freedom that I enjoy without being married. And somebody might wonder, wasn't Paul married at one point? And the answer to that question is likely yes. If he was indeed a member of the Sanhedrin, as he alludes to in Acts chapter 26 in his defense before King Agrippa, then one of the requirements of membership in the Sanhedrin was that he would be married. He's not married anymore, and perhaps it's because when he converted, when the Lord dealt with him and Paul embraced Christ, maybe his wife left him and went home. And he's going to talk about that scenario later in this chapter, and it's possible that he himself experienced that. Or he may be a widower. Maybe she's dead. So Paul is not married right now. And he says, I'm having the time of my life. The marriage is wonderful. But Paul says, I would that everybody was like me. He says, I can go where I please and I can devote myself exclusively and completely to the Lord without any distraction. Now Paul, my friends, had a gift. I don't think that I have that gift. I feel that I need a companion. And I don't think most people have that gift. I think there are very few. Notice he calls it a gift in verse number 7. But I would that all men were even as I myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God. Some people have the gift of singleness. Some people don't. If you have that gift, it's a gift in which a person can be content with serving the Lord. There are exceptions to the rule. But they have an opportunity to devote themselves completely to the Lord. But by and large, most people, the principle is it's not good for the man to be for man to be alone. So what Paul is doing in verses 6 through 9 is he's returning to the thought he introduced in verse number 1. It's good for a man not to touch a woman. I would advise you not to get married. He's returning to that thought now, and he's saying that especially in times of persecution, marriage tends to increase suffering and mental anguish. I've read some of the stories of the martyrs, and one of the most heart-wrenching things about their stories is when they talk about how their wives and little children suffered as a result of their imprisonment. John Bunyan, you know, was imprisoned, and he wrote Pilgrim's Progress from prison. He talks about how his wife and little children, his little blind daughter Mary, Brother Blake gave me a book one time about little blind Mary, John Bunyan's little blind daughter, how that she just wept. He said, it broke my heart. He said, it was like tearing my heart out by the roots to see that little girl cry because she couldn't be with her daddy. He was imprisoned for preaching the gospel. He was being persecuted for the cause of Christ, and it was affecting his family. You can understand, can't you, how that if he had not had a family, it would be easier to endure. But there's an increase of suffering and mental anguish because you think, okay, they're suffering as a result of my convictions. And that's hard for anybody to take. That's why Paul is saying to the church here, I would that all men were even as I myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God. One after this manner, another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and the widows, it is good for them if they abide, even as I. He says, if God has given you the grace to do so, it's more expedient under your current set of circumstances to remain single. But if they cannot contain, if the unmarried and widows cannot contain, if they can't be single, if let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. And the word means to be inflamed with passion. God has given marriage as a solution to the problem of immorality. So it's better to marry than to burn. Notice now in verses 10 and 11, he teaches that the marriage bond is intended to be permanent. And I'll close with this morning. Now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. Now, think about that for just a moment. Some people read language like this and they say, now this is Paul's opinion, but it's not God's word. This is a portion in the inspired record that's uninspired. I disagree with that. I don't think that's what he's saying. Under the married I command, he says, yet not I, but the Lord. And then he says later, but to the rest speak I, not the Lord. In other words, the Lord said, the Lord, this is his word, and then this is my word. Is that what he's doing? Is that what he's doing here? No. What he's doing here is he's saying Jesus Christ himself expressly taught certain principles. And some things he didn't teach, and I'm going to add on to what he said. I think that's what Paul is doing here. If you go back to Matthew chapter 19, you will see that Jesus himself expressly addressed this subject of marriage and divorce when he said in Matthew chapter 19, verse 2, the Pharisees came unto him, tempting him, and saying, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? That is, can he just divorce her willy-nilly at will? And by the way, there were people there. There were two rabbis, rabbinical schools, the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel. And one was a strict legalist, if you please, who said that divorce is never justified. And the other was a libertarian that said that if she burns the biscuits, if she shows her ankles in public, then you can just write her off. So one was very lenient and the other was very strict. And they come to Jesus tempting him. They're basically saying, whose do you agree with, Rabbi Shammai or Rabbi Hillel? Whose side are you on, Jesus? And Jesus is not going to get involved in the debate. He's going to say, instead of being preoccupied with reasons for divorce, you need to go back to God's original pattern for marriage and focus on making your marriage what it was intended to be. Then you won't have to grapple and debate over these issues. Listen to this. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And Jesus said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning, he's taken them all the way back to the book of Genesis, to the original pattern, made them male and female. And by the way, this verse teaches that Jesus believed in the historicity of Adam and Eve and the inspiration of the first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis. Have you not read that he which made them, he believes in the Genesis account of creation, he which made them at the beginning, made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. You've heard that all your life, haven't you? Have you ever thought about it? What God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. What God hath joined, let no man separate. That's a powerful thought. We hear it at weddings, don't we? It's the last thing I say before I say, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased to present to you Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. I say, therefore, what God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. That means not you, not me, not anybody else has any right to try to dissolve what God has brought together. In this day, my friends, when divorce is so prevalent and so easy, I mean, it's advertised $25. It's important for us to focus on trying to divorce-proof our marriages and trying to cultivate relationships that will survive the test of time. The marriage bond is intended to be permanent. And Jesus teaches in that passage that we should try to hold marriages together instead of looking for reasons to justify divorce. Now, some traditions teach that divorce is never permissible between believers. Roman Catholicism teaches that. That between people who've been baptized, that divorce is never permissible. Others teach that infidelity makes it obligatory, that you have to, that you're commanded to. But I want you to notice again what Jesus says in that passage. He says, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you. Now, he didn't command it. They said, why then did Moses command to give a writing of divorcement? Jesus says he didn't command it, he suffered it because of the hardness of your hearts. But from the beginning, it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be, now here's the exception, for fornication, for sexual immorality, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. What Jesus is saying here is that we need to focus on cultivating God-honoring marriage relationships, and then there will be no need for the debate over what justifies divorce. These verses, my beloved, are challenging a cultural mindset that sees divorce as the solution to a difficult marriage. It says, okay, if it doesn't work out, we can always get a divorce. Instead of working at it in the strength of that God supplies. Paul's counsel is, let not the wife depart from her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. But he says, but and if she depart. You have two options. Let her remain unmarried or be reconciled. You've got two options. If you say, okay, I can't stand him. I don't like him. We fussle and fight like animals. I just can't get along with him. You've got two options. You remain unmarried or you be reconciled to your husband. Now, again, where there has been a violation of the marriage covenant, a brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. He tells us in this passage that where there has been such a violent departure, you're not under bondage, but neither are you obligated. And if God gives you the grace to forgive and to rebuild and to restore so that you can have a marriage that sings again, my friends, and that God is honored and there is true repentance, and I dare say that's even preferable, but the Bible doesn't deny the victim. It doesn't deny the victim the right of justice in this case. Now, he goes on to talk about what about when a newly converted believer is married to somebody that's an unbeliever. Does that mean, you know, somebody's just been baptized, but their mate doesn't love the Lord or the church, and obviously there's going to be tremendous strife brought about in their relationship as a result of that? Does that mean then that they have the right to separate? And again, Paul is going to say no. But you stay together as long as the other party is willing to stay together, and you try to make your marriage one that would honor and glorify God. My purpose this morning in dealing with this passage, which is, by the way, the next passage in our ongoing study through 1 Corinthians. Somebody says, you're just trying to stir trouble, preacher. I'm just preaching the word in the order in which it's written. That's one of the values of this kind of preaching, is it forces us to deal with issues that we would ordinarily just sort of bypass and say, let's talk about the 23rd Psalm. But my goal this morning is to try to sow a seed that those of us who are married today, instead of saying, well, I'm getting bored and tired and it's just too much work, somebody else is more attractive or appealing, or it should help us, my friends, to say, no, by the grace of God, I'm going to keep working. I'm going to fulfill my own responsibilities. I'm going to try to make my marriage what God intended it to be to His glory, and I'm not going to take the easy way out. That's what I'm trying to say today, because people seem to be looking for easy solutions. And I'm not talking to anybody in particular today, but across the country, I want to be a voice saying, brethren, let's keep working at it, if at all possible. Let's keep trying. Let's fulfill our promises to God. I'm committed to trying to help marriages stay together. And I know there are cases where they can't, but I am committed in doing what is possible, my friends, to try to help them stay together. And I hope you are as well this morning. And those of you who aren't married today, if persecution ever gets here, you might rethink it, says Paul. But if you're looking to be married, I want you to know what's involved. It's not something that you can just sort of have a cavalier attitude toward and say, well, if it doesn't work out, we can just part company. What happens when you part company is lives are hurt. People are hurt. There's a trail of bodies. So it's important to be thoughtful, prayerful, deliberate, and committed when you go into that relationship. It's a wonderful thing. I thank God for it. It's been a blessing in my life. It's also added to my cares and concerns and frustrations, but yet I'm willing to handle it by the grace of God, because marriage is such a blessing. I hope that what I've said this morning will help you a little bit to think biblically about this very controversial but yet very important subject in our day. May we take the Lord's side, not Rabbi Hillel or Rabbi Shammai, but let's take the Lord's side. And in the beginning, God made the male and female to cleave to each other. And what God hath joined together, let not man. I don't have the right to put it asunder. You don't have the right to put it asunder. The man down the road doesn't have the right to step into my marriage and try to put me and my wife asunder. The woman down the road doesn't have the right to try to step in and try to put us asunder. Let no man interfere. Don't interfere with somebody else's marriage, my beloved. Don't try to put them asunder. Don't hurt their struggle. And may no one else interfere with ours.
How sweet, how heavenly is the sight when those who love the Lord in one another's peace delight and so
And that brings us to the conclusion of our study in 1 Corinthians 7. Now, God willing, tomorrow we will move into the 8th chapter and hear part 1 of a message entitled, The Christian and the Color Gray. I hope you will join us tomorrow. Have a good and godly day, and Now until tomorrow at this same time, may the Lord bless and keep you.